You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for them in the CUW logo on the sponsor part of our website. Joining me by phone today to talk about our topic, hashtag adulting. You hear it all the time in social media and other places. What does it mean to adult when we make this word adult into a verb? What does it mean? Well, joining us to help us discuss that, Shelly Schwalm, University Ministry Associate, Concordia University, St. Paul. Good morning, Shelly. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you as our guest and looking forward to learning about your work at Concordia University, St. Paul, and working through this topic of adulting. What does it mean to adult? Tell me a little bit about, Shelly, tell me about your work at Concordia University, St. Paul.
Yeah, so I serve as University Ministry Associate. I'm a Director of Christian Education. So essentially, working in our campus ministry, sort of programming with chapel and things like that. But most of what I do is spending time with students and discipleship sorts of programs, equipping students to be able to reach out to other students. But I do a lot of listening, a lot of ministry of hanging out and helping them navigate life and how Jesus fits into all of those things. And yeah, so I spend a lot of time with college students, and it's a blast, and it's challenging, and it's different every day. So, yeah.
What, when you hear this hashtag adulting, when you see it in social media, what is that? Does that relate to your work at all? What you do in serving students, the college students you work with, and making that transition from student life to young adults out in the rest of the world?
Yeah, absolutely, and it gets used widely as people are talking or posting things on social media. Even my own peers, you know, I'm a handful of years outside of college, seeing that being prevalent with recent graduates or fairly recent graduates as well. But with college students, I think it resonates because there is this sense of, I'm trying to be an adult. I often tell students here, college is your time to practice being an adult. This is a safe opportunity for you to try things and mess up without too many consequences at this point, as far as trying things vocationally or whatnot. So I think a big part of that is, especially as I ask some students about this too, of hashtag adulting, let's talk about that. And they really affirmed the fact of, I think more or less it's a defense mechanism, you know, to use this hashtag adulting means I'm trying to do things that I feel like I should do as a grown up, but I don't really know if I'm equipped to do them or know how to do them well or right. So if I kind of make a joke out of it or use this, you know, kind of hook, then it gives me space to maybe not be perfect at it or kind of give a trial run. So I think that's really interesting. I think some people really war against the concept because they're saying, oh, well, these are things you should just do. These are grown-up human things that everybody has to do. So let's not pat ourselves on the back or make a big deal about it. Which I can appreciate, but there's this gap, being able to say that there are lots of young adults that aren't necessarily equipped or know how to do some of those things, and to just say, well, you should know how to do it, isn't really sufficient in this time.
Who do you think young adults turn to when they need advice or when they don't know how to do some of these things that we think as society, we think they should already know how to do? Who do they turn to? Do they turn to friends? Do they turn to their parents? Do they turn to other adults that they respect, mentors or you know, professors? Who do they turn to?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I was kind of trying to ask around and get a feel for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really depends. You know, we don't all like to be put in a a generational box or whatever. But I will say there, I see a lot of students that are really connected to their parents still. This is a trusted relationship. I know that they have my best interest in mind. It's familiar, all these types of things. So I do see that happen. Peers, yes. But it's kind of funny because I think they understand that their peers are kind of in the same boat as them. so sometimes that's helpful to, like, we're in this together, but also they're not going to be that helpful to me to figure out skills I don't know how to do. And it's pretty fun. That's one of the best parts about my job is feeling like I get access. I have access and permission to be able to walk with students in some of those ways and getting to be present, and they get to know me. And sometimes it's about spiritual things. And everything can tie back to that too. But there, you know, not too long ago, a student came in and said, how do taxes work? Like, I know I need to do this soon, you know, and some of those pieces where there's a beauty in saying, I don't know what I'm doing and I need help. And to see that happen very earnestly in some of these students, and I see the relationships they have with some of their professors and that kind of thing. The danger is more and more isolation is happening. And so there might be a student that I'll see off and on, and then they are really struggling, and they'll come to me at the end of the semester and say, hey, just to let you know, I'm transferring. I'm not going to be back. Well, I wish you would have told me. You know, I wish you would have reached out for help. And so I think there's so much tied into fear. Fear of failure, fear of trying something, fear of letting people know that I'm struggling and that my life isn't Instagram worthy. And so then I might not reach out and ask for help at all. And that's where we see some of these really scary risk behaviors taking place and that kind of thing. And so it's really tricky where parents might not even know that their kid is failing a class or not functioning well. So I think it's a challenge for higher ed institutions to work on building those relationships so students do have these avenues open that they trust, that if there's something they're struggling with, it's as foolish as being able to navigate the light rail in the Twin Cities. Like, I don't know how to get back to campus, or all the way to taxes, or if I'm struggling with mental health, what do I do? So, yeah, I think that's one of our challenges, is to say, how do we build relationships that these students feel are trustworthy enough to ask those questions?
And if the pattern for establishing those relationships isn't established before they get to college, then that I think that doubles the effort it takes to build those relationships. You know, if they grew up in a family and a culture where having meaningful relationships with adults in addition to your parents,
right?
You know, for example, in a congregation where a young person is not only mentored and shaped by their parents' influence, but also by other adults in their congregation, and they have meaningful relationships with them, I think they learn how to interact, how to communicate, mm-hmm. how to have a conversation with adults, whether they're or with others, whether they're the same age or not. And if that's not established before they get to college, then I think that makes that chance of isolation all the greater.
Right, right. And statistically, seeing students who have had those relationships with other adults in their congregational experience in their life, they're so much higher likely to stay involved in their faith, to be connected to a church. And so that's really important. Where I think we get to this point, I got to talk to a group of DCEs a few months ago about what do we do with college students and how do we walk with them? And I said, you know, there's a lot that we need to do before we get to this point. It doesn't just start here, but like you said, building on these tools and this experience that they already have. So it can be helpful or not helpful.
What about, we talked about other people that they go to, whether it's friends or parents or mentors. Mm-hmm. What about resources that that young people are looking to for advice? Is it magazines, podcasts, TV programs? Where are they getting their views on the world around them? How are those views being shaped and molded? Is it what's most common among young adults today? When it comes to learning about the realities of the world, what's going on in government? You mentioned, you know, just using taxes as an example, mm-hmm. certainly going to another person, but do they have other sources that that you think are more common than others?
Yeah, well, and we have to remember too, the end of the millennial generation and then Gen Z, which is coming right up behind it, and we have a couple of classes worth of Gen Zers already. They've never not had some sort of online resource. So they live in a world of Google. If I have a question, if I'm having an argument or conversation with my friend about a fact or something's true or how to do something, I go to Google. I look it up on YouTube. And I see maybe what my friends on their social media have to say or to share. One student I was talking to about this a couple days ago, she made the point of, yeah, I kind of measure how I'm doing with my life based on my collective social media community. Is this comparable to what they think or where they're at, how they're adulting, how well they're adulting or not adulting? I can feel better about it or worse about it. I think that's really fascinating and really scary in some ways, because how do I know what I'm putting in my heart or in my mind is true through these sources? Do I actually have space to step back and take a break and be able to process and remind myself that my identity in Christ is sure and steady regardless of all of these things? And how do I decide in an era of fake news and people saying this is true and that's not and everyone having a bias, what do I do with that? And so it's pretty fascinating. I think there's no lack of information. And so we still have to somehow lean back on relationships, whether or not that's social media driven or, some of the great conversations we've got to have on campus in the last couple of months, just of all the things happening in our world. How do I know it's true? How do I look at what's happening as a believer in Jesus? Because that's not the lens that the internet uses.
Exactly. You brought up a good point that there's no lack of information. You know, the information is readily available when it comes to social media and the digital world. The challenge is it good? You know, is it accurate information? Is it truth? Does it lead us to truth and beauty and grace? Those things that are good. And without the relationships, you're right. Without those relationships, we're less likely to, who knows where we'll end up.
Mm-hmm.
If we're relying solely on social media and the digital world for what shapes our world and our ethos.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And realizing too that the information that I'm reading about a given topic is not just an article. More times than not, it's going to connect back to people. And our life is not just a intellectual exercise, but how does this affect people? And so how do I discuss this, not just as taking in information, but how is this affecting the people that I live with and do life with and share the world that I live in. So I think that's really, but this generation gets that. They get the empathy piece, which is pretty powerful. I don't know if you're familiar with the Passion Conference. It's like a big college-aged kind of mainstream Christianity conference that they have every January. Louis Giglio is kind of a big name in that. And this last month, they had, I think it was like 50,000 people, 50,000 college students coming together for this conference. And they drained the allotted Compassion children that they had at this event. Over 7,000 Compassion children that got sponsored by this group of college students. And so,
what does that say about this generation?
I think it said, you know, we can be so quick to say that they're entitled and self-absorbed. And there's some of that for sure in all of us, right?
It's that old Adam in us. Absolutely.
Right? Absolutely. But I think there's a lot of hope and a lot of joy that I experience with working with students who they really are motivated and they want to see change happen and they want to see people taken care of and they want to see the hope of Christ and of good things, you know, affecting people in a positive way, and they're creative about that and they think outside the box and they're really motivated to love and take care of each other. And so part of this whole conversation is maybe rethinking what our culture says is adulthood a little bit. Maybe it's thinking a little bit more about, I've seen my parents high value on career and making money and all these things, and I want to shift to the other side a little bit and say I'm really pursuing something a lot more meaningful, whatever that means. That maybe markers of adulthood isn't being able to buy a house. To help us rethink some of those things, I think that's going to happen in millennials and in Generation Z, to say let's kind of put our money where our mouth is. So we say we believe these things. Well, we want to see it. I see that in college students.
What do you envision being the new markers of adulthood? What are the challenges and victories that come from moving away and independence, or is moving away even a marker of adulthood anymore?
I think it is. Some students, we've talked about this a little bit with some students, they really feel compelled to stay close to home and family and be involved and invested, not necessarily living with their parents. Like, some people of my generation have kind of returned to that. I don't think that's the desire for most of the late millennial and early Gen Zers. They actually are pretty compelled to get out and try and do things. But I think there's something different in the meaningfulness. Like, it's really hard for students to say, oh, I'm just going to do something just because I'm supposed to, or think somebody else thinks I should. They want to know why. And so not necessarily that buying a home or getting married or whatever won't be a marker of adulthood, but that it needs to be meaningful. I need to know that this is a meaningful step in my life and not just something I'm supposed to be doing because people say I should, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
With the students you serve, what do you see as some of the challenges of moving from home to college. I mean, we always hear about that homesickness that some students might encounter when they first move away to college. You know, we're talking about several transitions within a matter of, really within a matter of a few years, moving from home to college and then from college, perhaps off to their own career, or finding a home of their own. Granted, as you pointed out, some of this generation move back home with their parents after college. How do you have strategies that you offer for those students that are moving from home to college and facing that challenge then? And then that for that next chapter as well.
Yeah, that's huge. And I say this, and I say it sometimes to college students, but not always, because I don't want them to take it the wrong way, because I don't mean it badly. But in a lot of ways, being a college freshman is a lot like kindergarten. This is the first major step out of their home since kindergarten. You know, you think about, they've really been in the same kind of situation for all of their elementary and high school years as far as relationship to home and that kind of thing. So it's the first big step. They grow so much and make big messes and need lots of help. And so we have seen, I've seen even in the few years that I've gotten to work with college students, giving them practical tools to be able to learn how to do things. So some of those financial literacy pieces, or we see our res life, our residence life folks and our student life folks that are doing programming for learning some of those practical pieces, those education pieces that aren't necessarily in the classroom. Another big place that I'm seeing this more and more, and we're continuing to talk about it, is coping. Coping is huge. There's tons of fear, especially in Generation Z, about fear of failure, hugely high expectations. And so incessant question askers, questions that you or I might think, really, you're asking that? And so to be able to step back and say, okay, you asking a question means that you're trying to pursue progress, that you want to grow. And so how do I not be frustrated that you don't know something I think you should know and meet you where you're at to help you, not to answer the question for you, but maybe to ask you another question, to give you space to have those adult training wheels, to try some things out. And it's okay to fail. But I think that coping piece, how do I problem solve and give students space to problem solve? How do I, mental health is a huge, huge, huge one, increasing each year with college students. How do I reach out for help? What are the resources that I need to manage my stress, to cope with struggles? And we see this predominant voice of saying, oh my goodness, look at these fragile college students that can't cope with the election or can't cope with this, that, or the other thing. Well, this is a post 9/11 generation. They've never lived in a society that doesn't have terrorism as a reality. They've never lived in a society where school shootings haven't been a regular occurrence. Their parents, they watch their parents go through financial distress. And so, yeah, there is a lot of anxiety. It's kind of a cocktail for not being able to cope. And so we do have to just kind of make reality our friend and stop cursing generational darkness and ask, how do we help? You know, and I think that's a big piece for all of us collectively, especially as church, to say, I'm going to take ownership of my piece and how I can be helpful and maybe get to know someone in this generation, see how I can be present or at least acknowledge and reach out to someone, maybe if they're visiting my church, or I know a college student that has gone off to college. When they come back, I can ask some honest questions or things like that.
So, and use this as an opportunity to be helpful rather than judging.
Yeah. Yep. Because that totally feeds into this fear that these students have to say, I'm not measuring up. I don't know if I can do anything because I'm frozen, because I'm afraid, because all these people think I can't do it. So it's kind of a cycle there. And we can be frustrated about that. But if we want to help this really lovely, intelligent, empathetic, passionate generation do something incredible, and something incredible for the kingdom that maybe we're not able to do, you know, that God has gifted them for such a time as this to do something different in their generation. I think that's awesome.
My guest today, Shelley Schwalm, University Ministry Associate at Concordia University St. Paul. Shelley, thanks so much for being my guest today and helping us talk about this trend.